1059 The Region, in partnership with RE/MAX Prime Properties, present On the Market, real estate advice that works for you. Have a real estate question? Call us at 416-335-1059. Tweet us at 1059 The Region or email us at info@1059theregion.com.
This is 105.9 The Region. I'm Tina Cortez with On the Market, York Region's exclusive radio real estate show. Our expert from RE/MAX Prime Properties is Asif Khan. Good morning, Asif. You have today's first guest, and we're talking mortgages.
Good morning, Tina. We sure are. And Colin Mason joins us. Colin's with the Mortgage Domain. Colin, welcome back to On the Market.
Thanks for having me.
So no surprise last week, Colin, with the rate announcement. Did anyone expect it to go up or down?
I don't think so. I think everybody that has anything to say about the impending rate changes is thinking more of the summer to late summer. So I don't think too many people were surprised that it was flat. It's good that it didn't go the other way, though. So I think most people are happy about that.
And what people were surprised or may have been surprised about was the return of the 30-year amortization, but it's only for a certain number of people. Tell us a little bit more about the return of the 30-year amortization for first-time homebuyers.
Yeah, so the government came out with two things to try to improve affordability or the ability to get a mortgage in Canada. The two main focuses were on amortization, and the other is being able to use more money out of your RSPs for your down payment. So the first one was the 30-year amortization. So on the surface, it sounds like a great thing to do, and you know, we're certainly not going to turn away any positive changes. The only thing is that it's only for new construction properties. Now, they did phrase it as new homes, so then a little clarity is required there, but I think most people in the industry know that that means new construction. The problem, as you and I were talking about earlier, is that there's just not a lot of new construction properties available to people out there, and many of those are going to be over the price point of an insurable mortgage. So, you know, right now you can get a 30-year amortization as long as you have more than 20% down with the financial institution. So it's not really going to make, in my opinion anyway, it's not going to make a huge difference to people that are looking for, you know, anything under $1 million or up to $1 million. It's really very focused specifically on new construction. That's one thing that I was a little surprised. I thought that I've always said, and I know you and I have talked about this many times, that, you know, young buyers really should not be tied to a 25-year amortization. If you take a, you know, mid-20 purchaser, why would the expectation be that they have a 25-year amortization? You know, I think there should be some tiered category with respect to amortizations that might help affordability. The other thing on the agenda was RSP contributions. Currently, are at $35,000 of your RSP contributions can be withdrawn in order to use for the down payment of a property, and that has to be repaid over the course of a period of time. Nothing's changed other than the amount that you can pull out is up to $60,000. So again, on the surface, it sounds like a great change. The only thing is that, as we know, there's not a lot of people have, especially the younger generations, they don't have $60,000 in their RSPs to pull out for a down payment. Most people that we're talking to that are requiring down payments beyond their threshold right now, or you know, most people are either older that have maybe owned other properties, so they have the large down payments. Many people are going to, you know, that generational pass down of wealth. They're going to their parents or family members to assist them with their down payments. So they don't have that money sitting in an RSP. So on the surface, it looks like, you know, the government's come out to try to solve the problem. But, you know, I appreciate the effort, but I'm not quite sure that it's going to help too much.
So this change is expected to take effect August 1st. What are you telling your clients then?
Well, to be honest with you, hasn't really drummed up very much in the way of dialogue. I think most people probably saw the headline, read into it a little bit more, and realized, no, this isn't going to be for me because it just doesn't apply. So to be honest with you, we really haven't, I mean, it only kicked in a few days back, and so we really haven't had a huge amount of interest in how that's going to impact people. Like I said, most of the people that we're dealing with right now are either selling and buying, or the high ratio mortgages are a little more scarce right now, just because those people are not able to purchase, particularly in the GTA and the GVA areas, are going to be probably the least impacted by these changes.
And we've talked about this a lot too, Colin, over the years, about how some announcements by the government are basically just to create that perception that they're doing something, but really they haven't done anything. Because this change, although it sounds like it's a fabulous change and people are going to be able to get 30-year amortizations, not in the GTA, not in York Region, because the average price is so high that they're not going to be able to qualify to have that 30% down payment if they're a first-time home buyer. What do you think of that?
Absolutely. I think that's the problem, is that, you know, it looks like there, we did something, but you didn't really do anything that's going to help anybody. So on a perfect example is the incentive that they just pulled off the table where they were helping people with the down payment. It was sort of that 10%, I believe, they were going to help provide people for a down payment, but you owe the government 10% of the sale price of the property. There were caveats to it that most people, when they looked at it with a lot more detail, realized that it wasn't a particularly good offer. So, you know, like you mentioned, they appear to come to the table with some changes to help, and that, you know, they flap a, this is going to help, this is what we're doing to help home buyers. But then when you actually unpack it and take a look, you realize that it's really not doing anything. So they sort of get the credit of trying to solve the problem, but without actually doing what needs to be done. And, I don't want to fault, I'm sure that the intentions are good, but I just think that they may not have a good handle on the market and what's actually needed. I think longer amortizations, I think, you know, a first-time home buyer should have maybe 40-year amortizations. If they could tier it some way in terms of, I know that they can't be biased in terms of age, but there must be some way that we could increase the amortizations depending on the likelihood of repayment and over a period of time. That is to say, myself, for example, would not qualify for a 40-year amortization. Mathematically, it just doesn't work out. So, you know, there needs to be some logic applied to it, because the younger generations are being penalized, and they're the ones that are really, that we're looking to buy homes. It's a, you know, if they're not buying homes, then people can't sell homes, and away we go. So,
Now, as part of the announcement, the federal government raised the, and you mentioned this, the raised the amount first-time home buyers can withdraw from their RSPs to $60,000 from $35,000 to buy a home. That took effect on April 16th, the day the federal budget was released. But as you said, young people may not have that kind of money in their RSPs. What can they do? What advice do you have for them specifically?
It seems to me that from what we're seeing in on our side is that most people that either have the down payment or they need to go to family members. It's very rare that I honestly don't think that I can recall the last time that somebody said, you know, it's too bad that you can't withdraw more money out of your RSP. I have a lot of money sitting in my RSP and I'm only able to pull $35,000 out. It's very rare that that happens. I think maybe in the last 5 or 6 years, I only recall one person saying that to me. They were actually under the impression that you could take more out. But it's a very rare thing that people have loaded their RSPs up, don't own a home, and require that $60,000. Also, if you do the math on how much $60,000 is going to mean in terms of a down payment, it's going to put you in and around the $600,000 mark, really. It's really not going to, what can you buy in the major urban areas for that type of price point? So again, I just don't think that, it's definitely a step in the right direction, but I think they really could have done more if they had, for example, extended the amortizations out to you know, maybe 40 years for high ratio mortgages and maybe allow people. I mean, I really don't think that the RSP contribution thing is that's actually fine. I just don't think it's really going to, it's whether or not it's going to help the market and affordability. And I don't think it is.
And Colin, for our listeners that are thinking that they cannot get a 30-year amortization if they're buying resale, there's a lot of other channels that you can guide them to, like Alt-A lending, B lending, that may still be doing the 30-year amortization.
Yeah, all of those include a 20% down payment. I think most people in today's market right now, kind of, unless you can find something that's under $1 million or $1 million and under, it's under $1 million, then you really need 20% down. And that does open up a lot more opportunity for you to qualify for a mortgage. But, you know, like I think I mentioned on other shows, what we're finding right now is that we're getting borrowers that are in their mid-30s, even in their 40s, that are getting their parents to co-sign for mortgages for them. So they really need to extend the amortizations. They need to do a lot more to help. I think if I could, you know, to show that I'm not trying to be one-sided, I think the only thing that I would say would make sense as to why they maybe slowed this down, the ideas down in terms of what they were offering, and maybe they will look at opening up to resale after they see how this does, is that they may, you know, with the potential of rates dropping, extended amortization may have thrown the market back into, you know, that bull market, that they may want to be a little bit more cautious in throwing it into quickly. So, you know, potential credit to them in terms of, hey, let's start off with this, let's see what happens, and then we can extend it to the resale market down the road. So we don't know, but that may be what their philosophy was.
Good points, as always, Colin. If our listeners want to connect with you to have a private conversation about how they can qualify for a 30-year AM or maybe even the $60,000 RSP and how they can pull that out, how do they reach you?
The best is contacting me directly on my cell phone. I'm always available. My phone number is 416-676-6777.
Colin, thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
After the break, the changing rules about commissions south of the border. This is On the Market on 105.9 The Region. Stay with us.
Need to connect with Asif Khan from RE/MAX Prime Properties? Call him, 416-985-KHAN. That's 416-985-5426. Or email asif@thehomeshop.ca. Now, back to On the Market on 105.9 The Region.
Welcome back to On the Market, York Region's radio real estate show. Over to my co-host and our real estate expert, Asif Khan from RE/MAX Prime Properties, with today's next guest, Asif.
Thank you, Tina. Joining us is Ryan Hodge from the Realty Firm. Ryan, welcome back to On the Market.
Good morning. Thanks so much. I'm really looking forward to being here once again.
Ryan, there's so much going on south of the border with the National Association of Realtors and what they're calling seismic decisions with regards to how real estate commissions are shared. Tell our listeners a little bit about what happened out there, and let's get into some clarity about what could happen here.
Sure. Well, there's a lot of speculation, certainly, in regards to Canada and these commission lawsuits that have really set a precedent for how real estate is done in the United States, you know, very much based on the fact that there were class action lawsuits, you know, in terms of how people were being compensated, you know, being anti-competitive, you know, all the stuff that we're seeing all over the media. And really what it's meaning now is that in the United States, you know, the National Association of Realtors has, you know, really indicated that real estate's going to be traded in a much different manner. You know, the commissions that were normally marketed on the MLS are no more. There will be different forms of agreements in the United States that are now required. And a lot of this is, you know, stuff that's being done in Canada already, specifically in Ontario, but, you know, there's a lot of speculation on what's going to happen for us.
So in terms of the National Association of Realtors in the U.S., they agreed to pay, I believe it was upwards of $400 million to compensate home sellers. Why did they have to pay that that compensation? What is a bit of the background there? Do you know?
Well, in essence, you know, the understanding is really that buyers were complaining and issuing, you know, claims that they really didn't know what the seller was, you know, paying. They didn't know how commission actually worked. So there was, you know, the element of ignorance to the fact that were commissions actually being disclosed? And if not, that's where, you know, the whole anti-competitive, you know, element comes in, and really it's more of a trust factor. And so this is now where, you know, there's been a lot of settlements. I think that there's a lot, from my understanding, that still needs to be decided. Who's really affected? The National Association of Realtors has certainly, you know, indicated settlement. A lot of the larger brands have been part of that as well. Some of the smaller mom and pop shops, you know, have been excluded up to a certain point in terms of, you know, the volume that they trade. But I think that there's still a lot, you know, left to be determined.
And it also depends on the contract that the agency has with the seller, because they're signing off to say, you know, just to dumb it down, they're going to say, I'm going to give you a sandwich to sell my house. And if I give you half of my sandwich or three quarters of my sandwich, my contract with the seller is still to get one sandwich. So
Correct. Where's
the discrepancy? I know that we have a lot more transparency in Ontario, especially under TRESA, and everyone knows what everyone's getting paid because it's disclosed on the MLS. How does taking that off of the MLS solve anything, which is what the National Association of Realtors has now suggested that they would do? Isn't that hiding the facts, and doesn't that create more distrust?
Well, I mean, it very well could. You know, what I found interesting, and I do a lot of speaking and consulting in the United States, and last summer, as a lot of this was really starting to unfold, you know, in terms of contracts, what I didn't realize were that many states did not require, you know, buyers to be under a representation agreement of any kind. So I think that, you know, really talks a lot to the difference between here in Ontario as well, because, you know, as agents and as brokers here in Ontario, you know, since at least 20 years now, we've had buyer representation. And, you know, with TRESA, that certainly, you know, changed things a little bit in terms of, you know, even more disclosure and more consumer protection. But we've been working with buyers and giving them, you know, a full agreement and indicating, you know, what the commission amounts are for decades now, where it's kind of like the wild, wild west in a lot of parts of the state. So if anything, I think, one, you know, the U.S. is going to start to really emphasize professionalism and full disclosure in many cases. And with regards to the way that the National Association of Realtors, you know, handles it with their policies, I think that will really follow suit. But I really don't know how that's going to, you know, impact a buyer knowing what is what when it's not really on the MLS anymore.
So do you think it would reduce the transaction costs for buyers and sellers here in Canada?
I don't believe that it will reduce the transaction cost here, because like Asif mentioned, you know, a seller's agreement is with the selling brokerage, and that will be the total. From that, the seller gets to decide what they're going to pay for compensation to, you know, a buyer agent that's bringing in, you know, their own client to the house. So how that will change things, I really don't know, but, you know, I still see a very, very strong need for representation on both sides of the transaction.
And going back to that sandwich example, if the buyer representative says, listen, Mr. and Mrs. Buyer, I'm going to get half a sandwich when I help you purchase this property, and this is what I'm going to do for you to help you purchase this property, the buyer already knows that their representative is getting half a sandwich. Now, if that person says, well, you know what, I want three quarters of a sandwich and you're going to have to pay me more and this is what I'm going to do for you, that's between the buyer and the buyer's agent, and that's a separate agreement. So
that's right.
What was not explained properly down south that caused this to result in a $418 million settlement?
Well, I think that ultimately there's a lot of, you know, lack of explanation in terms of the buyer actually getting, you know, a commission. And really that lack of buyer representation agreement factors in there. So when we look at the big picture in terms of the sandwich, I think that really it's just clearly an understanding and a knowing that both the buyer and the seller are, you know, giving parts of this sandwich to make sure that everybody eats.
That's right. And Ryan, I know we could go on for hours dissecting this. And, you know, at the end, it comes down to transparency. And we have a lot of that in Ontario. And I don't think we need to worry too much about that. But, you know, before we let you go, I wanted to get you to tell our listeners about this conference that you have coming up with the number one agent in the world, Faisal Susiwala. Tell our listeners a little bit about this special day and how they can register.
For sure. I'm so, so excited about it. Faisal's a great friend, and, you know, I know that he's been at a few of your conferences, Asis, and I connected with Faisal a few years ago, but at the start of the year, when he knew that he was, you know, on track for number one individual realtor in the world for 2023, he asked me if I would be willing to facilitate an event. So June 5th, we have the Real Deal Boot Camp in Guelph, Ontario. It is from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., and you're literally going to have the opportunity to learn the exact systems, the exact strategy, the entire playbook of the number one agent in the world, and this is going to be a huge opportunity. So people can register on Facebook, on Instagram. It's an Eventbrite event, so the registration link is there, and we can certainly get you that information.
Ryan, looking forward to it. Thanks so much for being on, and I will see you on June 5th.
Awesome. Always an honor. Thanks so much.
When we come back, your real estate questions. This is On the Market on 105.9 The Region.
Need to connect with Asif Khan from RE/MAX Prime Properties? Call him 416-985-KHAN. That's 416-985-5426. Or email asif@thehomeshop.ca. Now, back to On the Market on 105.9 The Region.
Welcome back to On the Market. Time now for our listener questions, and we start in Richmond Hill with this email from Cam. He wants to know if he should be concerned or question how long a property has been on the market. Asif, what do you think?
I'm going to say it depends on what type of property is, because the properties that are priced in the $2, $3, $4, $5 million range, they're not going to get a lot of attention. But so they may be sitting for a longer time. It does take longer to sell them. And then the other thing that you have to watch for is, suppose it's a tenanted property and the tenants are not being cooperative. There's a bunch of reasons why those will sit, because one, you need 24 hours notice. Sometimes tenants won't let them in. Maybe there's a certain number of days a week that the tenant wants people to come in. And then also take a look at holidays. Like if you look at March, we had March break, we had Easter all in there. And so that would take a lot out of selling days, if you want to call them that. So it depends again on the property, depends on the time of the year. If it's over Christmas time, you're going to get the same issue where people aren't really going out. But it definitely is a concern as well, because sometimes a property that's been sitting for a long time either has a really stubborn seller who will not want to decrease their price, or it could be a property that needs a lot of work and just isn't getting the offers or attention that the properties would command. So it really depends. It's property specific, but once we take a look at a property and the intricacies around the listing, then we'll be able to tell you if it is a concern or if there could be a reason for it.
So time on market may or may not be a red flag, but how do you find out that information? Does that come from your relationship with the agent?
It certainly does. And, you know, having the right conversations with the agents is going to help us determine what was wrong with the property, or if there was anything wrong with the property. So definitely have your agent contact the listing agent, and you'll be able to get a better idea, because a lot of times you don't know just by looking at the listing. if the tenant is being uncooperative, if someone was sick and they had to suspend the listing for a week until they got better. There's so many things that could go on. Sometimes when people go away on vacation, they might be gone for a week, 10 days, and they'll say, I don't want anyone coming into my house while I'm gone. So the listing will be suspended, but it will reflect on the days on market that it's been on for so long. So there's certain situations that you can't avoid, and it will increase the days on market. And then there are certain homes that are just on the market because they're unsellable or hard to sell.
Okay, here's a similar question, or not. I'll let you decide. Next question comes from Dan in Markham. He wants to know, what issues or information is a seller required to disclose when selling a home?
Well, that's another great question, because there's a lot of stuff that needs to be disclosed. Like if there was a death in the home, and it depends on what type of death. Was it a murder? Is it a grow operation, or was a grow house in the past that they had remedied? There's a lot of stuff that needs to be disclosed. Even something as some would consider minor, that, you know, basement flooding, that has to be disclosed. So there's a lot of stuff that, you know, what we generally say to our agents is, when in doubt, disclose, disclose, disclose. And the more information that you can provide, the better it is. Obviously, if you don't know what happened in that house 15 or 30 years ago, there's nothing to disclose, or you can't be held liable for not disclosing that because you don't know. But there's clauses that you can put in to say, to the seller's best knowledge, there has not been anything that needs to be disclosed, and clauses like that that would help the buyer in that instance.
So if there's a structural issue, does that have to be disclosed?
It does. And also another good thing is if there's any insurance claims. Mm. So you can write in, you know, have you had any insurance claims, and what were they for? Now, if the seller doesn't know previously, they don't have to disclose it. But if it's something like the sewer backed up in the city of Toronto and the basement's flooded in the entire neighborhood, that's something that the new buyer should know, because they would want to know what's been done since then, and is there a possibility that that could happen again.
And what about things like if there is a death in the home, as you mentioned, why does that information have to be disclosed?
There's a lot of people that will not purchase a house where someone has passed away.
And okay.
It could be just, the feng shui or anything that they're looking at that way that would be a detriment to them going into that property. So that has to be disclosed, especially if it's a murder, suicide, anything like that. Natural deaths, usually you can't really help that. So people overlook it, but some people still won't buy that house.
As a reminder, if you have questions for On the Market, send your email anytime to info@1059theregion.com. But Asif, if our listeners prefer to contact you directly, how can they do that?
Quickest way is to call me or text me at 416-985-5426.
If you missed any part of our show, go to 1059theregion.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and Audible. I'm Tina Cortez for Asif Khan. Thank you for listening.
Need to connect with Asif Khan from RE/MAX Prime Properties? Call him 416-985-KHAN. That's 416-985-5426. Or email asif@thehomeshop.ca.